This is Talk of the Nation Science Friday from NPR News, and I'm Joe Palca, in for Ira Flatto. NASA's Genesis mission was designed to collect particles from the solar wind material that scientists could then compare to material found on Earth. The scientists expect the solar wind contains traces of the ingredients in the original solar nebula from which the solar system formed. After spending almost 900 days collecting material out in space, last week the probe returned to Earth. It was supposed to float down on parachutes and then be snatched out of the air by stunt pilots and helicopters. But that didn't work out quite as planned. The parachutes didn't open, and instead of a gentle landing, the probe smashed into the salt flats of Utah at around 200 miles an hour. At first, all was gloom. But now, after spending a week assessing the damage from the crash landing, mission scientists are hopeful that they may still be able to get some useful data from the probe. Now let me introduce my guest. David Lindstrom is the Genesis program scientist at the National Aeronautics and Space Administration. He joins me by phone from his office at NASA headquarters here in Washington, D.C. Welcome to the program, Dr. Lindstrom.
Good afternoon, Joe.
And if you'd like to join us, give us a call. Our number is 1-800-989-8255. That's 1-800-989-TALK. And if you want more information about what we're talking about this hour, go to our website at www.sciencefriday.com, where you'll find links to our topic. So, crash landing, 200 miles an hour, you would think that things got pretty shook up inside this spacecraft, but I gather there is, as I said, some hope that that there will be some of these solar particles salvageable.
Right. Well, first I need to explain a little bit what the collectors are.
Okay.
They're something like 250 altogether, and they're basically 4-inch hexagons, and they're made out of the purest materials that we could find. Many of them were silicon wafers, much like the semiconductor industry uses. These, unfortunately, are very fragile, and so when the spacecraft hit, they broke apart, and in fact, some of the small pieces were lost into the mud, or not exactly mud, but the salt-flattened material.
Right.
So they were lost, but sizable chunks still remain, and since the science focuses on measuring elements sort of one atom at a time, many of these experiments can use very small pieces.
Well, this may be one of those simple questions with a very complicated answer, but why don't you just open up a jar, you know, hold it up there in the wind for a couple of days, you know, a couple of years, close the jar and bring that home? Why do you need to have these wafers?
Actually, the solar wind hits at considerable velocity, and these individual ions are actually implanted several atomic levels deep into the materials. So it's not like a gas, it's individual particles.
I see. And so they're embedded, and the idea is that you collect these wafers and unembed them or just sample them in place.
Many of the experiments will use some kind of ablation of the surface to feed the elements into a mass spectrometer or something to do the individual, you know, ion by ion counting. So we can get by with quite small materials.
And I mean, you were saying you can get by with small material. How much is enough? Because I presume these ions that are blowing off from the sun, they're not all identical to one another.
No, but and in fact, the way the spacecraft was set up, there are some collectors that were exposed to the sun all the time, whereas others were only exposed when the sun was in different states. So there were collectors that were set up to get low-speed solar wind, high-speed solar wind, and the coronal mass ejections, which is, you know, yet a different state of the sun. But overall, I mean, they get implanted, and the average, you know, any point that you analyze will be the same as another point on the same wafer.
So Can you describe what you would actually see? I mean, what are people working on right now? The spacecraft itself, actually, it looked a bit like a flying saucer as it came wobbling in, but it didn't appear to actually break apart. It seemed to have landed intact, but they're not looking at the spacecraft. They're looking at this canister inside. Is that correct?
Right. And the canister, the spacecraft split on impact. It sort of hit on edge. And in fact, the sample canister inside, which is about 3 feet in diameter, also was split open and dented quite badly on one side.
I see. And where is it now?
It's still at Dugway Proving Ground, where we had set up a clean room, and they're very carefully going through and disassembling it. You know, it's now bent metal, and they're having to cut off a piece, and then, you know, once they do that, they can salvage a little bit more of these collector materials, and eventually they'll unpack the whole thing and have the samples secured to go to their ultimate destination at Johnson Space Center, where they will be curated and sent out to science investigators.
We're talking about the Genesis mission and its it's definite hard landing, but maybe not its fatal landing in Utah last week. Our number is 800-989-8255. That's 800-989-TALK. And we're talking with David Lindstrom, is the Genesis program scientist at NASA headquarters here in Washington. So, I mean, what was the point of the mission? What can you actually learn about the solar system from having these particles? It seems as if knowing about the sun wouldn't tell you much about the planets, but maybe they do.
Well, we in many senses have had much better samples of the early solar system from meteorites, but after all, the sun makes up some 99% of the solar system, and we haven't known very well what the starting materials were. So there are models out there that depend critically on knowing the overall composition of what the sun and its family of planets and asteroids, etc., formed from.
Is there an issue now that this thing has split apart and been exposed to the Earth environment that you'll be looking at contaminants and not the real McCoy of what you were hoping to look at?
That's exactly the problems that we have now. The mission was designed to keep these materials as clean as we possibly could, because terrestrial contamination is a problem. But in part because the solar wind is implanted within the chips, we hope that we can clean them off and not damage the implanted layer.
I see. So in this case, it's a good thing that they actually went past the surface layer, because you might be able to get something off the top without dislodging this stuff that's stuck underneath.
Absolutely. And there are a number of different materials, and they all act a little bit. You know, they were chosen to optimize certain kinds of elements, certain kinds of analyses, and so some of them survived extremely well, others did not. For example, there's a gold collector that was optimized for noble gases, and that seems to have survived very well, and is relatively clean and will be quite usable just as is, whereas others have suffered from the impact.
Okay, let's take a call from one of our listeners. Let's go to Steve in Milwaukee. Welcome to the program. What's your question?
Hi, thanks. I'm curious if you're looking at the structure of the craft itself and the way it landed, so that you can maybe use this, some variation of this hard landing technique in the future, rather than, you know, trying something a little more complicated like the aerial recovery, or if you could even do something like for Earth landings like we're doing on Mars with the big airbags.
Interesting. That's an interesting thought. What about that, Dr. Lindstrom?
Yeah, thanks, Steve. Of course, there has been a mishap investigation board appointed that is looking at every detail of what happened in this mission. The fact that some things happened very well. We did extremely well with the navigation. This came down within just a couple of miles of the initial target point, which is pretty good since we started out from a million miles away. And there have been suggestions that future missions would use a spacecraft much like this and come in without a parachute. But much is going to be learned from the study of the spacecraft, and we certainly are not wedded to having parachutes. They were chosen for this mission because of the fragility of the collectors, and we wanted a very soft, very clean landing. But other missions may not require that.
How long do you think it will take to actually do this kind of triage on what's in there and figure out what you've got and what you can't recover?
I think it'll be a few weeks of work.
A few weeks?
Yeah.
And how many, is it a big crew? I guess it's somewhat limited by how many, it's a small capsule. You can probably only get a few people standing around it at any point.
You'd be surprised how many people are interested and stand around. But, you can't have more than about 10 people around it at a time. And so it is painstaking work. And, this is just taking it apart and saving the good samples. Eventually, those good samples have to be sorted as to materials and where they came from and selected for as which will be appropriate for which analyses to be performed on them. So there's many months more of work once they make it to the Johnson Space Center.
I see. Are there any more sample return missions that are actually in the works or perhaps even launched into space?
Absolutely. We have Stardust, which was actually launched before Genesis and is due to come back in January of 2006. It looks a lot the same. This is the mission that flew through the tail of a comet and has collectors on it to catch particles from the comet. So we're very much looking forward to getting that one back in another year and a bit.
Does that come in also the same way with a parachute and hopefully be snagged out of the air?
It has a parachute, but it had not been intended to be snagged out of the air. It's actually coming in at night, and we'll just soft land on the desert with a parachute.
I see. Okay, and just quickly, what is that one going to tell us about comets or about the whole solar system as well?
Primarily comets, and its collectors, instead of being these fragile silicon wafers and the like, are extremely fluffy stuff called aerogel, which is able to take these particles coming at very high speeds, many kilometers per second velocities, and slow them down and preserve these tiny little particles within this aerogel material.
Okay, well, that's where we have to leave it. David Lindstrom, thanks very much. Okay. David Lindstrom is the Genesis Program Scientist at the National Aeronautics and Space Administration. When we come back, shifting gears from the particles of space to human-made devices smaller than a particle of dust. Stay with us.